Now, we know the makeup of the new cabinet, more about that in a moment, but the backlash that has emerged over the number of women appointed to senior ministries, just 3 women in total, down from 4 in the last government, continues unabated. Paul McAuliffe, your party, Fianna Fáil, is the worst offender in this regard. Fine Gael has at least 2 cabinet ministers, Helen McEntee in education, Jennifer Carroll McNeill in health, but Fianna Fáil has 1. That's Norma Foley, who is the new Children and Disabilities Minister. I mean, is this a function of just having 7 female TDs in total as opposed to 41 male deputies? Why is that such an issue?
Look, I think putting together nominations to government is a tricky business. You have to reflect geography, you have to obviously reflect gender, you have to reflect the experience of different people, and then the issues that you want to progress. So that's the job that we as Fianna Fáil and the Dáil has given to Micheál Martin in consultation with Simon Harris, and that's the proposal that they put forward. So I support that. Like there are we don't have operate a cabinet in our that's a UK concept, but at government there will be 5 women sitting at government, including the Chief Whip Mary Butler and Super Juniors as well. So I understand this is an issue, but it's a broader issue than just right. I think it's
an issue within your own party. The Fianna Fáil Dublin City Council member Rachel Batten said women have been, quote, sidelined. She said, "I find it difficult to accept we continue to tell our daughters that there's an equal playing field in politics when evidence stands in stark contradiction." And when you put that together with the refusal by the government as well to advance an alternate female candidate for the European Commission as well, when Michael McGrath has been put forward, it does look like there's a women problem in your party, doesn't it?
Well, look, equally you can look at the results of the general election. There are many women who very narrowly missed out on winning a seat that would have changed those numbers. I think of people like Deirdre Heaney and Fiona O'Loughlin and many others. And so we can only deal with the results that are before us, and then the Taoiseach must select from within that. I think when we get to Tuesday and Wednesday, you'll see the full range of ministers that will be available. And I think there will be more, and there's very, very able and capable people within Fianna Fáil, but male and female, but particularly as we're addressing gender, I'm thinking of people like Niamh Smith and Catherine Arda and many others that I would imagine will be appointed. And so that's a matter for the Taoiseach, but the fuller picture will probably be made clearer on Wednesday.
Okay, Jennifer Cowden, as you looked at the cabinet appointments and totted up the numbers, what was your reaction, and is this important?
I was firstly wondering, was there a James quota as much as a female quota, to be perfectly honest? But the Taoiseach, the party leaders, are constrained by who actually gets into the Dáil. We are operating a system where we have a 40% gender quota for the general elections. You do use the councils as a mechanism for doing your political apprenticeship. There is calls, and rightly calls, for a gender quota to go into local government. Now, the legislation around local government and the elections, there's a lot of work there to be done to put in a similar type of gender quota.
There is an issue, though, I suppose, in the lead up to general elections, when people are putting together the tickets, as to whether or not a woman is on the ticket in a meaningful way with a ground operation
or
to back
sweeper.
Her up, or whether
exactly.
She's added as a box ticking exercise. Just to explain, any listener who missed out on this, there are as many Jameses, men called James, as there are women in the current cabinet. But that issue, in terms of, you know, the preparation for a general election and how sincere the effort is to get women elected, is one that came up at the last election.
Yes, that political pipeline of getting candidates through. There is that gap in the legislation there in local government. And you also have the complicating issue of the fact that the local and European elections happen so close to the general election that you had people who had literally just gone in to council, didn't necessarily have an opportunity to show their capabilities to then get onto the ticket. And it is something that will have to be looked at in the meaningful element of the gender quotas, that you are actually getting women onto the ticket that actually have a chance of getting a seat, or, and as you said, not just ticking a box that is there. And it's something that will have to be looked at, because we are doing very badly in comparison to other Western European countries when you look at their makeup of parliaments and cabinets, whatever system they're using. But we are not doing well at all.
Okay. Pádraic McLoughlin, Sinn Féin, I think as the best record of all the parties in this, you have 24 male TDs and 15 female TDs. Why do you think that's different? I mean, structurally, in terms of getting women onto tickets and getting them elected.
Well, it is crucial, and obviously the leader of our party is Mary Lou McDonald, the First Minister in the North. It's Michelle O'Neill. We have 15 TDs. But many, many years ago, we grappled with this. And I remember a talk from Professor Kathleen Lynch, who dealt with equality studies. And she said that the reason why it's critical that we have women at the decision-making table is that women do most of the caring, most of the nursing, educating. And it stands out in our society that those issues just aren't dealt with. We still have a huge problems in childcare. We still have, obviously, huge issues in the whole area of care. Primary care, disability care, and I think that reflects the lack of women at the table. So this is very serious. It's not just about, you know, gender. It's about that the experiences of women are unique and those unique perspectives are not at the table.
And Gary Gannon, I suppose your party leader is a woman as well. There's strong female representation in your own party, but I suppose it's not just those areas in which women have had traditional professional expertise. It's the different perspective a woman might bring to bear in a cabinet position, maybe that has been dominated by male politicians for decades.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. I think you have to be able to 50% of the population are not going to see themselves particularly reflected across their cabinet table. And that's going to be a problem. Look, in terms of ourselves and the Social Democrats, I mean, we're a party that's predominantly there's a huge amount of women within the party at every level, from leadership right the way down. I suppose the culture within the party that stemmed from the referendums where women were, particularly in the abortion referendum, were driving the issue. I mean, that created a capacity for us where we actually had leaders actually building the party from right from the beginning, from day one. So the culture was always there within that. But I mean, when we looked across at the cabinet and the announcement of the cabinet today, I mean, we're taken aback by only three ministers who are female. I mean, that cannot be acceptable. I mean, it's not to say about
right. Although, would you concede that, you know, one of the ministers said, now Minister for Education, then Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, in her decision to take maternity leave, it cleared the way to have that discussion that this is something that is normal, legitimate, and should be expected, that maybe helped your own party leader make the same decision?
Yeah, when Minister McEntee took her maternity leave, it was actually Holly Cairns who actually substituted for her on her first maternity leave, and without question created a culture which this should be seen as the norm and it should be seen as acceptable. So yeah, I think there's been great leadership shown in that field over the last number of years. We'd like to be seen it continue.
All right. Looking at the other issue, Jennifer Kavanagh, geography. What have you made of that? Does it matter?
Well, Ireland is always caught in this whole, we don't want politics to be parochial, yet we all want our local cabinet minister. So either we want one or the other. Do we want people who can actually do the job, or do we want every local townland to have a representative?
That said, the South East is doing all right. You've got...
Well, the South East would say they're probably not, because it's...
Well, you've got the Minister for Housing, you've got the Government Chief Whip.
But say, for example, Waterford being a city, has always said that it doesn't do well unless it has a minister. So, for example, Martin Cullen is still...
Obviously, Mary Butler would dispute that she's not a minister.
Well, the people will still go up and thank Martin Cullen for getting the motorway down to Waterford. So there has always been that feeling, and I can talk from where I'm based, that Waterford's been left behind as one of the five cities of Ireland. And there was a hope that somebody, be it if Sinn Féin got in, that it would be David Cullinan, or if it would be Mary Butler, that she would actually get a full cabinet portfolio. Because remember, there's only 15 full cabinet ministers. You can be a super junior, but you're not getting to vote on anything at the end of the day.
Obviously, Mary was a junior minister in the last government and was really key to delivering the URDF funding, for example, for Waterford.
She also has responsibility about the airport. Just to say, for mental health as well as being the government.
Absolutely, and I think that idea that ministers are limited to either their own particular gender or their own geography doesn't bear out, you know. Like, for example, someone like Stephen Donnelly did a huge amount of work in the area of women's health and made that a real priority. And equally, you have ministers from rural areas that have helped really significantly on urban issues.
But you do have the luxury of saying that, as you know, as a TD from Dublin, and there are plenty of Dublin ministers. Pádraic McLoughlin, you're from a border county.
There's also a quarter of the population.
Sure, but Pádraic McLoughlin, you're from Donegal, an area of significant disadvantage. The border, Midland and Western region are regarded, you know, it's acknowledged that that is an area of disadvantage, and yet a Spartan display of ministers.
Oh, indeed. I mean, if we look at the Connacht-Ulster area, one seated cabinet for that huge area. And there is clearly a huge imbalance towards the east. So it will be of real concern. And we have, I mean, just get the map of Ireland out. You look at the rail network, you look at the motorway network. It's clear to see that, you know, we're playing catch up all the time. If you look at the region I live in, this west northwest region, you know, we're one of the lowest performing regions in the European Union. How can that be comparative to the rest of the state? So it is of serious concern.
I mean, I'm from 5 minutes away from O'Connell Street, and he's still in neglect despite the fact that we had a Taoiseach for many years and the Minister for Finance. I think this whole regional thing is a bit of a nonsense. I mean, we're not particularly massive size Ireland. I think ministers should get the job and actually do what's in their brief. I don't particularly take that on board. I think everyone who's going there should be doing the job, be that in housing, transport. I think this is a bit of a nonsense argument about region when it comes to Ireland and the size of it.
Let's get into the other issue of the week. I'll start with you, Paul McAuliffe, the issue of speaking time, because there was a temporary compromise made where the Regional Independent Technical Group would not be regarded as opposition TDs in order to advance the order of business in the Dáil last week, get a Taoiseach elected, get a cabinet selected, and the machinery of government up and running. But that decision has yet to be decided before the Dáil returns on February 5th. Will there be meetings of the Dáil Reform Committee before that to decide that matter? Will it be resolved by February 5th to avoid a repetition of the scenes we saw?
Yeah, look, as a member of the Dáil Reform Committee, we met yesterday. We're going to meet again on Monday, and there's other meetings outlined. We've received advice from the Office of Parliamentary Legal Affairs. And look, it's probably worth not revisiting too much what happened last week if you want to move forward.
Yeah, I think
there is a need to move forward. But I do think it's worth noting what happened last week.
From wherever, isn't it?
But, like, essentially, the Dáil has two jobs, to elect a Ceann Comhairle and to nominate a Taoiseach. That was on the agenda for the first day sitting. And because it wasn't, the issue of speaking time was not on the agenda, and because those people who were in opposition did not have the numbers to add it to the agenda, they used a parliamentary tactic to effectively shout down the business of the House. And so that's a question now for the opposition, that when they lose an order of business vote next week or the week after, if they don't get their way on a particular piece of legislation, is it now a legitimate tactic for 20, 30 members of the opposition to stand and shout at the Ceann Comhairle until they get their way?
Okay, well, Gary Gunn, luckily we have members of the opposition here to put those questions to Gary Gunn.
That's a particularly ridiculous analogy. I mean,
that's what happened, Gary.
All right, okay, yeah, look, hang on a second. Just one second. We're going to have a discussion here. We won't try and reenact the proceedings in the Dáil last week.
But there is some reenactment that can happen because what Paul just said there is actually a mistruth as in terms of what the analogy was. Nobody is saying that every vote the opposition would shout down. But what happened last week was the government tried to create a scenario where the opposition would actually be made up of members of their own government. Now, Colm, if I came into your show and asked you for a quarter of the show, could I interview myself? You would probably look at me with 10 heads and so would your listeners. But that's exactly what they tried to prescribe here. And precedent matters when it comes to the Dáil. Having a technical group that's made up of members of the government, not only members of the government, people who put the programme for government together, said he would stick through them through the good times and the bad, would have been a precedent that we simply could not allow. So obstructionism, which is a tactic that has been employed across parliamentary democracies for many years, was possibly employed. It wasn't a strategy.
I think obstructionism has normally been applied in the past where people have used a filibuster and spoken, obstructionism
in terms of this sort would actually ensure that there didn't proceedings, which would have made a precedent by which a member of government would have went into the opposition and used opposition time was a precedent that could not be facilitated. It would have been an abhorrent affront on just normal parliamentary democracy and practice.
Pádraig McLoughlin, now that it has been done once, will those rambunctious scenes seen in the Dáil last week be used in the future if the opposition feels it's not getting a fair shake?
Well, I think what Paul McAuliffe left out, and I'm kind of astonished at his presentation of it, have they learnt nothing? They didn't listen to the opposition, didn't listen to the Irish people, you know, took the Irish people for fools. Michael Lowry stood outside the plinth with his seven independent TDs and says, we will support the government in the good days and the bad. He said a lot more. They negotiated a government. They have four ministers from his group, one from the Healy Rays. And he really believed this. Michael Lowry's circus that was ongoing for a week, he really believed he was going to bulldoze his way into the opposition, take leaders' questions, time of statements, positions on committees from the opposition, and that would be fine. And we were just going to lie down and accept that. We appealed to government repeatedly. It was all over the airwaves, our concerns, and we were just ignored. Micheál Martin dismissed them, thought it wasn't a big deal. And that's why we ended up with this. Right. And
I just ask you a question of that. Yeah. The standing orders were regarded, I mean, would your solution to this be to amend the standing orders? Because that's what was put forward by the joint opposition. I mean, if amendments to the standing orders are being suggested, does that suggest there was sufficient ambiguity in them for Michael Lowry to make that argument?
Well, I think any person in Ireland who, in God's name, would suggest that Michael Lowry is a member of the opposition in any country in the world, never mind Ireland. So clearly the standing orders, when we looked at the standing orders as an opposition, and we made a very substantial joint submission as the opposition, we believe the standing orders do not allow for this. Standing Order 170 clearly, explicitly states that these groups are in opposition. Now, how could you interpret Michael Lowry to be in opposition? Okay. So we strongly believe that standing orders don't allow for it, but the government have engaged with us finally. We could have avoided this on Wednesday if they had just listened to us at different points along the way. But finally we got there on Thursday morning.
The scenes that were seen last week, is that a tactic that will be revisited in the future, or was that a one-off event particular to the circumstances?
Well, I think if the government treat the opposition with utter contempt, take the Irish people for fools. You know, I'm very proud of the opposition jointly stood together, not just on Wednesday, but the week before, with joint submissions, jointly making a stand saying, we will not accept this Michael Lowry circus,
okay,
you know, trampling over our rights in opposition.
We do need to bring the listeners an update on the power and water situation.
To be fair, that argument would only stand up if that was an issue that was being decided on the day. It wasn't being decided on the day. It was clear that the Count Corla had a process for doing it. You can only change standing orders when the Dáil Reform Committee is formed, and you can't form that until you form a government. Like, the opposition used the opportunity to leverage something, and they did it in a way that I felt was undemocratic.
All right. Okay. We'll have to agree to disagree on that one. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with an update on the weather, the recovery from that, and how things are going on the power and water front. That's coming up.
Saturday with Conamo Mungon on RTE Radio 1.